You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works. This is episode 94 of the Common Good Podcast with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature a conversation with Julie Traeger and Ava Torres Bueno about single-payer health care. We specifically focus on the progress being made in the state of California toward providing health care for all. Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. I think this podcast can go a long way toward giving our listeners and everyone else a kind of health care, the kind that we can all afford and understand. So, everyone, keep listening. You're about to hear two women from professions in healthcare tell why universal healthcare is within reach and how you and I can help make it real ASAP. So listen up.
Well, today we welcome to the Common Good Podcast two people who are vigorous advocates for healthcare for all. Doesn't that just sound wonderful for any of us who are working, trying to work with the healthcare, the system, getting a little care, getting a lot of expense, and trying to get the care we need. So here we have Julie Traeger and Ava Torres Bueno, and they're ready to talk about healthcare for all, both countrywide, but most especially what's happening here in California. But let's start. First, a little bit. Why aren't you giving your time to this?
Well, I kind of backed into this, honestly. I was in healthcare for 15 years, working as a palliative care director for a hospital. And it took me about 2 years to realize that our healthcare system wasn't working. And I started looking at what was going on in Europe and other developed nations, and I realized that their system was so much better. It was so much more efficient. It was just working much better than our system. And so I really started to become an advocate then. And since we've had a change in administration, and I think since the Affordable Care Act really hasn't panned out the way it was, I think that we had hoped, and our healthcare system seems to be as much or even more in jeopardy as it was before, I've certainly become an advocate of more urgency in the last few years.
Okay. That was Julie Traeger talking, just to keep, since we have two voices here, we'll just try to keep you straight. Now we're going to have Ava Torres Bueno tell us a little bit about how she got into this.
I also have a long background in healthcare. I worked at Planned Parenthood for 10 years, many, many years ago. I've worked in physical rehab with spinal cord and brain injury patients, and I've been a psychotherapist in private practice for 30 years. So I have seen what happens to people who don't have good health insurance, and I've seen what happens to people who are incredibly privileged and whose mother knows the wife of a U.S. senator and can get her Social Security and all the medical benefits that go with that in 3 weeks rather than 18 months. So I've seen the profound inequities in the system, and working at Planned Parenthood, of course, mostly with low-income people. And personally, I have a mother-in-law on Medi-Cal, and if she didn't have Medi-Cal, my husband and I would now be destitute because we would have to be paying for all of her health care. So it's so clear, kind of everywhere you look, how unequal the system is, how much poor people, people of color, have a completely different level of care and a completely different life expectancy than well-off people. And this has always seemed appalling. And then with the change in administration, to use Julie's euphemism, it became clear that we were all in all of us are in tremendous jeopardy. And people talk about California leaving the union, which is, of course, not going to happen and should not happen. But I felt immediately on November 9th that California needed to act like a different country. And so I got involved with the state organization called Healthcare for All that has been advocating for universal healthcare for the last 20 years.
Well, this is the first time, just for our listeners, that I'm meeting Julie and Ava, and I'm just so impressed with the credentials that you have bringing to this life experience and your work with the healthcare system, which works for some and is terribly broken for so many. Okay, so where are we nationally with this thing? I mean, is it just not happening because not enough people truly want this? I mean, it wasn't that long ago when all we could hear about when we talked about healthcare for all was, oh, well, that's socialism. That's, and I hardly hear that language anymore. Now it doesn't mean that we have healthcare for all, but where are we nationally as you look at it?
Well, I certainly think that it's not because people don't want it. In fact, it's now becoming a nonpartisan issue. There was a recent Gallup poll that had always, up until now, shown about a 30% gap between Republicans and Democrats in terms of support for a single payer. And that gap is out now close to zero.
Mm-hmm.
So, and 70%, I think, of Democrats want it, 80% of independents want
wow.
it, 58%, I believe, of Republicans nationally want it. So it's not that the American people don't want it. It's that the big corporations don't want it. And, you know, I want to be clear that the biggest lobbying group in the country, if you combine the insurance industries, the pharmaceutical industries, and the hospital association, that is the medical lobbying group. That is
wow.
that is bigger than Koch Brothers, bigger than Big Oil. So
bigger than the NRA.
Bigger than the NRA.
Okay.
So and we no longer, I believe, have even a two-party system anymore in this country, because legislators, politicians from both sides of the aisle accept money from the same places.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the real problem. We have a healthcare problem in this country, but what we really have in this country is a democracy problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't start to tackle that democracy problem and start to dismantle the power structures that are in place currently that keep profit over people, and the healthcare industry is one of them, we will never live in the country that we want to live in.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add, Ava?
No, that was brilliant.
Wasn't that brilliant?
Yes.
I mean, already my conversation, how I engage in this conversation is changing, because I've talked with people a lot about insurance companies, health insurance, and I've talked about big pharmaceutical companies. I have not talked in that equation about a hospital administration and how much they are a part of resisting healthcare for all. Did not know. Wasn't thinking that way. All right. So thank you for that overview. Now, as you've already alluded to, in California, we're trying to do something, but I don't know, are the statistics that you've given in a recent Gallup poll the same in California, or does California want it even more, or what are the demographics in California around this thing of healthcare? Are you going to talk, Alvin?
You go, because you know the numbers.
I do know that. Well, I happen to know that 70%, latest poll, 70% of Californians want single payer.
Okay. Okay. So, pardon me.
And also, a number of legislators in California, not all of them, but a number of state legislators are on board with this. We have now, starting almost a year ago, Tony Atkins from here in San Diego and Ricardo Lara from Long Beach, state senators, introduced a bill called Senate Bill 562 for a healthcare for all in California bill. It zipped through the Senate as sort of an outline, an interesting outline, but an outline of a healthcare bill. And it has gotten stopped quite dead, not quite dead, in the state assembly by the state assembly, the chair of the state assembly, Anthony Rendon, who parked it for a long time in the Rules Committee. And again, as Julie said, Rendon is a Democrat, but if you look at who he takes money from, in the last 3 years, Anthony Rendon took $700,000 from Big Pharma and the big insurance companies. So he is clearly parking this and trying to keep it from going anywhere because a huge major funder of his is the people who absolutely don't want to see healthcare for all. And the reason they don't want this is because they make enormous, gigantic profits off of the healthcare industry. 30 out of every 100 healthcare dollars in the United States go straight into the pockets of the health insurance companies and don't go to provide healthcare. They simply pay dividends to stockholders, and they pay unbelievably enormous compensation packages to the people at the top of those structures.
And don't really provide any value to our healthcare system at all.
Okay, so every dollar I give in my co-pays and all that,
30 cents
is going right to the insurance company, who isn't helping me at all. In fact, they're trying to do everything they can not to insure my procedures.
Exactly.
And all. So, yes, now, okay, you've mentioned, okay, our California lingo, and not all of you who listen to this are from California. So we want to be a little bit clear here. Our California lingo is SB, what was it,
562.
Okay, it's Senate Bill 562. Is there one in both houses, or do we just have one house in California? What is it?
It's passed the Senate, and it passed the Senate actually pretty easily, and it's now stuck in our California Assembly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, what you mentioned about the Rules Committee, okay, not only is the insurance, the medical insurance, complicated, legislative procedures are very complicated for most of us. So, if whatever you can do to help us know, because I'm thinking at some point, some of us listening might like to take some action around this, so we would really be helpful to hear how this legislative process goes, and you've already mentioned it some, but go through it again. Take us through it.
So now that it's passed the Senate, and once it passed the Senate, it went into the California Assembly, and Speaker of the Assembly has the power to table a bill whenever he or she so chooses. Speaker of the Assembly, Anthony Rendon, chose to table the bill, which basically means that it's stuck in rules, in the Rules Committee, and in the rules kind of file of legislation, and it has to be actually assigned to a committee in order for amendments to be made to the bill. So one of the ironic things about this whole process is you will see Speaker of the Assembly Rendon quoted in all of the papers across the state of California saying that the reason he tabled the bill is that it's woefully incomplete. Well, you know, that happens a lot with legislation. This is not the first bill by any stretch of the imagination that's been put introduced into legislation with the intent that we are then going to build that bill with consensus decision making, with good legislation, with good information, once that bill passes through the political process. But he keeps saying the bill is woefully incomplete. Well, it can't, no amendments can be attached. That process cannot go forward if that bill is stuck in rules. It has to be assigned to a committee. And then all of the work that has actually been done, and many people are led to believe that no work has been done on this bill since it was introduced to the Senate, but that is absolutely not true. There has been a great deal of work, not only around how we're going to pay for it, on the coverage, how we're going to pay providers, but also now we're working on that transition period because we know that a transitioning to a brand new type of healthcare system is going to be a bit complex and it's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. So we're now working on the logistics of that. So, but we can't put any of that meat, any of that work that we've done into that bill until it gets released. Mm-hmm. And Speaker of the Assembly, Rendon, has the power to do that anytime he would like.
Mm-hmm. And so if I understand then, Rendon at this point is the one who's stopping it. And if it gets assigned to a committee, if it were to get assigned to a committee, then what? Then they hold hearings and they start amending it and they present then to the assembly, full assembly, a more complete bill which is what Rendon, by using this little thing, well, that it's woefully incomplete, is. But it works in part because there's lots of us in the state who don't understand it. We say, well, yeah, it must be woefully incomplete because, gee, this is a big step. And so how are we going to pay for it? And how is this thing going to get financed? And that's what people say again and again. So tell us, how are we going to finance it?
There are several studies about how to finance healthcare. They've been done over and over again in various states. And what they show is that if you do a sales tax on non-essentials, so not on food, not on housing, not on energy, if you do a sales tax, it would come to about 2.3% for someone spending about $1,000 a month on non-essentials, meaning clothing and all kinds of other stuff that we buy, then they would be paying about $5 extra a month on their sales tax to go towards healthcare. But what they wouldn't be paying is they wouldn't be paying co-pays when they go get health care, a word I'm forgetting.
Premiums.
Deductibles. All of that would go away. So they'd be vastly better off financially at the end of every month. It's not only a tax. There's other tax proposals. But there's actually a great deal of money. Something like 70% of healthcare dollars spent in California and in the United States are already public monies. If you think about it, the VA is all public money. If you think about it, Medicare that people over 65 get to pay for their health care is all public money. It's money they have already paid in over their working lives. Medi-Cal is public money. So it's not that California would have to come up with every cent to cover healthcare for all. California would have to come up with 30% more than is already being spent in public money now, and would have to negotiate. This is one of the hard things that needs to be worked out if this could ever come out of the Rules Committee. Negotiate with the federal government to get a block grant for all the Medi-Cal money spent in California, all the Medicare money spent in California, so that we could spend it covering every single person in the state, everybody in, nobody out. Every single resident of the state of California could be covered for infinitely less than we are each paying for our own health care now.
Wow, thank you. And I'm just thinking, people listening to this, in fact, I've had this conversation, and they'll say, well, with the current administration in Washington, fat chance we're going to get this block grant that you mentioned. But, at least that would put the debate where it belongs, whereas right now we don't even really get to have that debate because it's in Rules Committee. And the administration in Washington isn't always going to be what it is. I also am thinking of a Scandinavian I heard talk about this, and the U.S. people say, oh, but you pay so much taxes. He said, He said, I get so much benefit out of that. I think of it as an investment in my health and in the education of the next generation. And I thought, ah, now that's a nice word. Good taxes going for things that benefit us. That is an investment indeed. I think you wanted to get in here and say something, Julie. So,
I wanted to revisit the Black Grant and the idea of waivers, first of all, because there, it isn't as if we haven't looked at this and taken a hard, deep dive into this. And it's pretty clear to us that there are legal, financial, and political workarounds to obtaining those waivers. Now, that isn't to say that we wouldn't be able to get them without a fight. But there is a lot of legal precedence, and let us not forget that California is the sixth world's largest economy. We are competing financially with other countries. We are not competing with other states. This gives us a tremendous amount of financial and political leverage. So I don't think there's anybody who's been in this fight for a long time who doesn't think that we can get control of that $370 billion or that 70% of our healthcare costs that we currently have funded already. And, you mentioned other countries and taxes, and it is true that a lot of what we're not talking about, I think, with healthcare, with guaranteed healthcare, is not only does it dismantle a power structure that keeps profit over people in place, and that gives us hope for the dismantling of other power structures that need to be dismantled, but it also, there are many ancillary benefits to single payer that we're not talking about, and I think we should be. I think it should be brought more into the conversation. So, bankruptcies, for example, will be cut in half. 50 to 60% of bankruptcies nationally, and it's probably pretty close to that in California, although I haven't looked, are due to a medical diagnosis. Homelessness would go down. A huge percentage of homeless are homeless because of a medical diagnosis or because of untreated mental health or addiction. And those things are included in SB 562. Those are included in free coverage for everyone, or guaranteed coverage for everyone. Businesses will be more profitable on a global level. We have many, many businesses in California that are competing on the international level, but they're competing with all of the other developed nations who don't have to pay for healthcare. Their businesses don't have to pay for it. So there are many others. I think the school system alone in California would save about $3 million annually that can be booked back towards the classroom. It's not totally clear how cities and municipalities are going to come out of this, but as it stands right now, SB 562 will not tax cities and municipalities who are paying for health care through the government, and so they'll have a bit more money to put towards infrastructure as well. So there are many benefits that that will occur just as a side from guaranteed healthcare.
And they're impressive. I mean, they're really, cumulatively, that's an impressive list.
And not to mention we're going to save lives with both adults and babies. Because let me tell you, we pay twice as much as most developed nations for healthcare in America. However, our healthcare outcomes are terrible. Our healthcare, our child infant mortality rate is much worse than most developed nations, and so is our adult mortality rate. So we will certainly save lives.
And our child mortality rate and our adult mortality rate are also not even across the culture. People who live in Del Mar, La Jolla area of San Diego County, which is a wealthy part of the county, live on average 6-point-something years more than people who live in Spring Valley and Canto, a less wealthy part of the country and the county. And this is not just about how much do you make? It is also about race. People in this country who are people of color, their life expectancy is lower than white people. So the injustice The absolute injustice of our healthcare system is also something that single payer will immediately start to fix.
We'll return momentarily to our conversation about California healthcare. In 2018, we've arranged our podcasting so that on the first of the month, you'll be able to hear a new episode on One Earth Living produced by the Common Good Podcast. On the 15th of the month, a new episode of One Earth Living produced by Simple Living Works. This adds another option for you each month on both websites, simplelivingworks.org and the Jubilee website, casayubileo.org. Now let's return to our exciting conversation about healthcare for all.
We hear things, Medicare for all, universal payer, and there's a number of other things this goes by. Are they different? Are we talking about the same thing?
They're all the same thing. Universal healthcare, single payer healthcare, Medicare for all those kinds of, those are all different language for the same thing. The single payer in single payer healthcare is the, in California, it would be the state government. The Department of Health in the state of California would have a fund into which all this money that's already being spent on healthcare would get dropped in, plus whatever taxes we needed to pay to cover all of us with healthcare would all go in there. And the single payer, the universal payer, is the state of California. If we got a national system, like every developed country in the world, then it would be the feds. And lots of people go, oh, government screws everything up, blah, 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 blah. That's a myth, a story told by the ultra-right for the last 40 years. That's the story of the Koch brothers, who don't want to pay any taxes for their billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars of profit on oil and gas. That's a story we've been fed through the media for the last 40 years. In fact, government has done us great good. The Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, which in fact was signed by Richard Nixon, amazingly. All of these ways that the government protects us from big corporations have worked well. Medicare has protected the lives of millions of Americans. And the story that government is corrupt, the story that government is out to get us is a story told by uber wealthy libertarians who don't want to pay any taxes on all of their money. And we've been brainwashed and brainwashed for 40 years.
Is it true, I'm currently under the impression that it is true, that Medicare is, in terms of overhead, is a very low overhead compared to what we have now, which you have explained already, is 30% goes just to insurance companies. So what's the overhead for Medicare? I'm not sure.
Oh, boy. Do you know?
It's between 1% and 3%.
Oh, my goodness.
Between 1% and 3%.
And our insurance is, what, 15%? Between 10 and 15%.
The overhead?
Or it's 30%.
It's 30%.
Yeah.
So the story that government is corrupt, and it's crazy because government is providing almost no overhead payment for medical care. So, and this brings me to another point. People, as you said earlier, people will say, oh, this is socialized medicine. In fact, this is not the socialization of medicine. It is the socialization of insurance. But doctors, hospitals, all other affiliated healthcare providers would remain private entities, and they would be paid by the state, or if we ever get federal health insurance for all, be paid by the feds. And this is the way almost all of the developed world works it. The doctors and nurses and acupuncturists and everyone are private entities, and the state is the payer. The only place that I can think of, there's two places I can think of where this isn't the case. Truly socialized medicine is Britain, and you may have heard, oh, it's not working and it needs to be dismantled. But again, that's the ultra-right libertarian, don't want to pay any taxes people who are trying desperately to dismantle the National Health Service. The British people love the National Health Service.
And in fact, the last ranking for 2017 ranked Britain the most effective, efficient healthcare system on the planet.
Well, if you can't tell, folks, these two women are on fire on this issue. And you know, you're making it clear, too, that healthcare for all is a great doorway, a portal to many of the other kind of social changes that can benefit the well-being of humanity in so many ways. So what are some other maybe high-profile voices that are advocating for this, and maybe even, states are really mixed, right? I mean, aren't there some states that are just also working on their plans? And so tell us something about those positive, those voices that are really developing that are strong and positive on this issue.
There are a number of states working on their own single-payer plans. In California, the California Nurses Association is the leader in terms of a big organization with a fair amount of money to put into this. There's physicians for a national health plan. There are 59% of American physicians want single payer. That is a tremendous change from 40 years ago when almost all physicians were opposed. Other voices are all kinds of labor unions. More and more small and mid-sized businesses and even large businesses are recognizing that this will help their bottom line incredibly, and so they are starting to get on board with this. Really, the only voices against this are big pharma and big insurance. And because they will lose out, they will have to make less incredibly egregious profits than they're making now. So I want to say something about Big Pharma. Big Pharma contends that they use all their profits. Oh, our profits go to drug development. They recently got a big tax break from the current administration, and the first thing they did was give bonuses to the people at the top of those organizations and cut development on drugs for extremely serious conditions like Alzheimer's disease. So those are the voices against. The voices at four are often in healthcare, although we are being told now, oh no, there's physicians groups who are against this. And of course there are. The physicians who make the most money are going to make less. So neurosurgeons and cardiac surgeons, yes, they will make a bit less money than they make now. But doctors at the bottom of the doctor system, family practice doctors, gerontologists, pediatricians, these are the kind of physicians who will have a more secure and more steady income, and it will be more because they will not be spending money for their own practices to hire people whose sole job it is to negotiate with the insurance companies to get them paid. That will all go away.
And we need those more general practitioners because we're so incredibly specialized in our medical silos that that's another. I mean, I'm going to so
that's
many.
That's a whole other discussion.
That's another whole discussion. Did you want to add some things to this about Julie, about the positive voices that you're aware of, and any maybe high profile individuals who are talking in favor of this? I mean, we're aware of Bernie Sanders, of course. Mm-hmm. At a national level, but there must be others in California as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some important candidates coming up. You know, I think this is, I'm so glad you're doing this podcast now. It's an election year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it brings up an important point. So we do have a candidate who's running for governor of California. His name is Gavin Newsom, and he has not only come out and support multiple times in large speeches in front of large crowds in terms of support of single payer, but he's also been endorsed by the California Nurses Association, which is a pretty big deal. And so I do trust that he's supportive. There are, Gail McLaughlin happens to be a candidate who's running for lieutenant governor who is very supportive. But I think, you know, if we're, again, if we're going to have the country that we want to live in, if we're going to start to change this profit over people, we're going to have a litmus test for our candidates. Mm-hmm. And that litmus test is that they don't take money from the largest corporations who are part of the largest lobbying groups. Mm-hmm. So not all corporate money is bad, of course. You know, you can. There are some large corporations that are benefit corporations that have money to give who are yes, they're for profit, but they are committed to good on this planet. There is good corporate money, but a good litmus test for our current level of candidates is: do you take corporate money? And you know, we really have to support, I think, those candidates who are not in the pockets mm-hmm. of big corporations.
That sounds like a follow-up question is, do you take corporate money? And if so, which corporations are your biggest funders? Because if the biggest funders are the ones that are the obstacles to the legislation we want, then there's a problem with our candidacy.
And people can get information on this with ease. If you go to a website called opensecrets.org, mm-hmm. you can put in the name of any legislator. Is it a California website or national? You can put in any legislator's name, and Open Secrets has delved into who they get their money from and presents it incredibly clearly so that you can know who your state legislators take money from. You can know who your U.S. senator and your U.S. representative take money from. And then their behavior starts to make more sense.
And when you go to a town hall and you see a candidate speaking, you know, be one of the first ones to ask a question of that candidate. Have you pledged to be corporate free? That's a really easy question to ask, and it's a pretty hard question for them to wriggle out of unless they've actually pledge to be corporate free.
Okay, well, this has just been an incredibly enlightening and high-energy conversation on a topic that is not just close to our hearts, but to every cell in our body, right, and to our mental health as well. So, I, and I'm sure everyone listening, appreciate this, and this conversation deserves to be widely listened to, and so we're certainly going to do our best to promote that. Do either of you, I'm just going to say thank you to both of you, but do each of you, either of you, have something you'd like to add as we're getting to that place where we say adios?
I think it is so important, if you value your health, if you value your parents' health, if you value your children's health, it is very important to get as tuned into this topic as you can. Give it as much time as you can. Not everyone can get super involved. But if you're in California, go to the healthcareforall.org website and join if you can. If you can't join, find your county's Healthcare for All chapter's Facebook page and like and follow that Facebook page so that you keep getting information into your inbox so that when we ask you, please call Lorena Gonzalez Fletcher's office and tell them right now you're for Healthcare for All in California, there's a vote coming up, you can do that one thing. You can pick up the phone and make that call. That's what I think people need to try to do.
And I'd just like to add that in my view, cynicism is obedience, and optimism is a revolutionary act.
All right.
So be optimistic. Trust that we have the resources in this state, of all states, mm-hmm. but in this country, this amazing country. Believe in ourselves. Believe that we have the intelligence and the resources and the will to pass, not only to pass something like this, but to make it good, to make it great. We absolutely have, and we have lots and lots and lots of role models to follow. It's not like we're creating this from scratch. There are many other countries who have done this before us. So believe in ourselves. Be optimistic. It is revolutionary.
Wonderful. Wonderful final words. If any of you have organizations, business groups, service clubs where you need someone to speak on this subject, we can make sure. I mean, I encourage you to contact both of these people. I mean, both together, Ava and Julie haven't you noticed today? They're just a great 1-2 punch, aren't they? They're like a tag team here. So let them come to you, your church group, wherever you are. This issue, you know, is business, it's personal, it's psychological, it's service. There isn't a niche in society where this doesn't touch human life and relationships. Thank you for listening, and we're so appreciative for this time that Ava and Julie have taken with us today. Thank you both.
You've been listening to our conversation with Julie Traeger and Ava Torres Bueno about developments in California Healthcare for All. We urge you to visit the website of California Healthcare for All. We'll have that in our program notes. We'll have the address for that, but if you just search under California Healthcare for All, it'll pop right up before you. There you'll find helpful information on how you can help build momentum for this change in your area. Recent post to the Jubilee website, casajubileo.org, include 10 reasons for being part of a One Earth Jubilee delegation to Mexico. Well, the next delegation is June 2 to 9. There's still time for you to sign up. I'd love it if you did. Send me an email, give me a phone call, and we can talk about how you can become a part of this delegation. Take a look at those 10 reasons. They're on the home page of the website, and that will give you some additional information of benefit to you. You can go on this trip for $950 once you get to Mexico City. Everything after that is completely included in the $950. So that's what I most want to call people's attention to in the work that I'm involved in right now, Jerry. So what's your situation?
If you'd like to make a donation to the Common Good Podcast, just click on the donate button at casajubileo.org. That's casajubileo.org. Casa Jubileo. Jubilee is a mostly volunteer 501c3 nonprofit organization, so your donations are tax deductible. When you donate, if you ask for a copy of the little mini-book on forming powerful little Jubilee circles, we'll send you one. Circles help us beneficially radicalize our work for change. Donate $50 or more all at once or in quarterly payments and receive, again upon request, an autographed copy of Lee's book, From Egos to Eden, Our Heroic Journey to Keep Earth Livable. By donating, you'll know that in this time of crisis, you're making a difference. Also, I'm making some significant changes for Simple Living Works for 2018. The Simple Living Works Weekly Digest has been discontinued, though the monthly digest of links to articles on colleagues' websites continues on the Simple Living Works site and is updated weekly. The Simpler Living Weekly Nudge and the Daily Nudge both continue. The Simple Living Works podcast has been reduced from 2 episodes per month to 1, released on the 15th, alternating with the Common Good podcast, released on the 1st. Both podcasts will be sent to the other's subscribers, so subscribers are welcome to comment on this new arrangement. If, for example, you choose not to receive one of the two, feel free to ignore it or delete it. The March mid-month bonus episode features author and transformational educator Mark A. Birch. Future episodes of Simpler Living One Earth podcast feature Susan Taylor of Just Money Advisors on her new book, What About Our Money? A Faith Response. Subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of Lee's blogs, The Common Good Podcast, Simple Living Works Podcast, and other intriguing happenings and events such as non-conform freely celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage, and holidays without consumerism. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Common Good Podcast Facebook page. Well, it's time to wrap up this episode of Simpler One Earth Living. If you're a regular listener, you've heard our closing comments, so we'll say goodbye now. But if you're a newer listener, here's what we need you to know about this podcast. Please subscribe to our podcast and to Jubilee Economics and One Earth blogs. We post nearly every week, so if you're a subscriber, you'll be notified when we post something new. Subscriptions are free. Subscribe to our blog through our website. Subscribe to the Common Good Podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Have you liked us on Facebook yet? Well, please do, and leave us a message. We don't hear from you nearly enough. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of the One Earth Project, wishing you well as we strive together to bring One Earth economics into being for the common good.